Welcome to Coffee and Therapy, where we spill the tea on therapy-related topics, sip our favorite coffee, and share our expertise with parents, professionals, clinicians, and anyone who could benefit from a little therapy. Hello, and welcome back to Coffee and Therapy. Pew, pew, pew. With everybody who doesn't know if they should talk or not.
Hey.
Hello.
It's been so long since you recorded. I like forgot how to do it.
It has been a minute since we recorded.
Yes.
But the hashtag listeners don't life. Know that. Hashtag mm-hmm. life. The listeners have been getting lovely, lovely entertainment to their ear holes every 2 weeks. Sarah's favorite word. Yes. And today's episode should be engaging, entertaining, might be a stretch, because it's going to be a little bit of a heavy but timely topic, and I think a really great opportunity for discussion. And one of the reasons why we started this podcast is to have conversations like this. So if you are listening to this podcast, it comes out on Friday, July 14th, and very recently on Wednesday, July 12th. The American Medical Association passed a resolution at their annual conference to, as it's being posed a lot on social media and clickbait kind of articles, to withdraw their support for ABA and open the door for some more evidence-based practice work, which that statement is both true and untrue in and of itself. So we'll put links in the show notes to all of the facts and research we have to date. Again, you're listening to this on July 14th, potentially 2023. So things are going to change and evolve here with this conversation. So there may be statements we make that are outdated in 2 weeks, in 2 months, in 2 years. But the American Medical Association House of Delegates had their annual meeting. Oh, apparently it was last month. Look at me fact checking myself right here. And they adopted a resolution entitled Revision of H185.921, removal of AMA, American Medical Association support for applied behavior analysis. So they did call it that. But the original policy that they're referencing is focused on health insurance coverage and stated that AMA supports coverage and reimbursement for evidence-based treatment of autism spectrum disorder, including, but not limited to, applied behavior analysis. And what they have updated that language to say, AMA supports coverage and reimbursement for evidence-based services of autism. They're also eliminating that word treatment, which is something we've talked a little bit about on the podcast of some of the evolution of language around therapy. I'll link to that episode too. And so they're saying AMA supports coverage and reimbursement for evidence-based treatment of autism, services of autism spectrum disorder, period. And just saying that it's including anything that could be considered evidence-based versus explicitly saying ABA. So while I think this is a big advancement for people who have been calling on ABA to push for more neurodiversity and inclusion, and this is a big wake-up call to, I think, applied behavior analysis of we're losing support from larger communities that are the means for billing and insurance, it does not remove the billability of ABA, nor does it remove doctors or physicians or AMA as a whole of coverage. What I think the biggest thing this did, and the person who actually sent this to me is Courtney, who's of course here on the podcast, who's a BCBA for some reason. This is the first episode you're listening. Great, welcome. Courtney sent this to me first of all the people, which I think speaks really highly to how much Courtney is trying to push from within of her own industry to be better, to do better, to listen to autistic voices and to open these dialogues. And I think one of the biggest things that happened, we'll link to the House of Delegates handbook that has all of the intricacies of what was talked about at the AMA conference resolution voting majiggy. I don't know what to call this thing. They cite sort of all of these things that autistic adults have been saying, that people who are pushing for neurodiversity have been saying, of the instances and evidence-based harm that they're seeing with ABA and the roots of applied behavior analysis from Dr. Lovass, who's, you know, sort of the originator of ABA and is accredited as such, where he believed that children who are autistic are incomplete humans and that a lot of the evolution of ABA that's come from that philosophy is sort of the backbone of why it's so problematic. So I think this opens a big discussion for ABA to evaluate its pitfalls, to talk about alternative treatments and options. So I'm going to leave the door open there for other people to chime in on kind of what happened. Maybe Courtney from a BCBA's perspective, because we are trying to open this two-way street of dialogue, because ABA is here and, you know, a lot of people hate it. A lot of people swear by it. A lot of people are in the middle and know nothing about it. So I think I'm going to pass the mic.
Yeah.
And see Courtney's thoughts.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I think like a few emotions came over me when I first heard about this. My supervisor is actually who shared it with me first. We talked about it at the end of last week. And at that point, it wasn't like all over social media and stuff. So now I've had a little bit more of a chance to think and process. And it's, you know, it's sad and scary for my profession, but at the same time, I feel like excited because this does open the door, like Alyssa was saying, to so many things. I think for me personally, what I am most excited about is that, and I think I've talked about this before on the podcast, like I really value collaboration. And I think in one of our most recent episodes, we talked about how
we sure did.
Yep. BCBAs are known to, you know, not be so collaborative. And so the fact, like, what I'm reading into this is saying, like, yes, you know, ABA has done, you know, damage, to say the least. I don't want to go into too much, you know, but it's done damage. We're getting better. And I think this opens the door for us to show that we don't know everything. We never have known everything. You know, but OT, speech, music therapy, they don't know everything either. But if we come together and use all of our tools together, we can complement each other so well. And now, hopefully, my other hope for this being announced is that other therapies will be able to be more accessible to families and clients who needs it, and more hours will be able to be recommended, because, you know, 25 minutes of speech therapy a week, you know, that's not really gonna do a whole lot. Mm-hmm. Whereas, you know, ABA, we are able to prescribe 20 hours, 30 hours, up to 40 hours a week, and we know that, like, that's a lot. Sometimes it's too much, and I think we've talked about that in other episodes as well. So while, you know, my fear and my sadness comes from, of course, it hurts to hear that people are, you know, against ABA. And I know that that's a thing. And I think I've kind of, I don't think numbed myself to that, but I'm trying to move past those, like, fearful and sad emotions. And I'm trying to look ahead to where, like, while yes, like, there's a lot of negativity happening, I think that there's so much good that can come out of this, to be honest. And I really also hope that more ABA providers really look into being more collaborative and adopting more of an interdisciplinary approach, because, guys, like, let's be real, we don't know it all. You know, we can cover so many different domains, but we don't know it all, and we never will. We never will.
And I think a statement you made that's really important is that you've numbed yourself to that. I think, and when we started this podcast, there's been an echo chamber within ABA of, we're awesome, we're great, we're so evidence-based, we have all this data, we have all this research, we're the best, right? And that's happening in the ABA field. Mm-hmm. And then the neurodiversity movement over here is yelling into their echo chamber of, autistic adults have been harmed, there's evidence mm-hmm. of it, it's problematic, and there's not been dialogue across the board.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Now I just don't think ABA can numb themselves and ignore it anymore.
Yeah.
And say, no, that's not true. Or mm-hmm. no, because I didn't see it, right? Mm-hmm. I'm not going to say it's akin to other things happening in our culture and society, right? But when we talk about a lot of things happening politically, people say, oh, no, that's not a problem. You know, mm-hmm. you know, like racism, that's not a problem in America mm-hmm. because I'm not directly impacted by it, or I don't see it. Mm-hmm. And I think that's happening a lot in ABA, where they're like, well, it's not us.
Yes.
So it must be someone else.
Yep.
And in this document, it even says, and this is from cited evidence-based research, which I think is a really helpful part of this, because ABA and all of our spheres of therapy are so about facts, data, science, and numbers.
Yeah.
And this is in that document from AMA that we have linked in the notes. ABA has been repeatedly linked to post-traumatic stress disorder, with 46% of 460 ABA participants meeting the diagnostic threshold for PTSD.
Yeah.
A literature review found the evidence base for services for adults with ASD to be underdeveloped. A Cochrane review further reported very weak evidence in support of ABA for something that, you know, in this echo chamber has been saying, we're so powerful because of our data.
Yeah.
There's no research that's saying, actually, it's not. It doesn't have the power, the consistency, the longitudinal studies that really back it up.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's just very interesting, all of these different things they're citing. At one point in there, too, when we talk about the overprescription of ABA, they talk about how it's a $42 million industry. Like, mm-hmm. there's so many companies that are making $42 million a year mm-hmm. off of implementation of services. And I think, you know, money pulls a lot of things in a lot of different directions.
Oh yeah.
So it maybe not be if you're a BCBA listening at your clinic, but we can't keep having that mentality of it's not at mine.
Yeah.
It's somewhere, right?
Yeah.
The problem is in the structure of this system that we've created.
Yeah.
And right, the call's coming from inside the house now. ABA is going to have to do something
mm-hmm.
because the people who are here at the American Medical Association are the physicians who are prescribing and recommending treatment.
Yeah.
Right? At the root of why people often are like, well, how do families even end up with ABA if we know it's controversial? And it's because a physician is probably prescribing ABA and yeah. social groups, because that's a very typical prescription for autism services, which may or may not actually support the individual that they're seeing, because that may or may not be that physician's expertise. I would assume a developmental pediatrician, their expertise is going to be in supporting children in the emergence of their diagnosis,
mm-hmm.
but they still know what they know and they don't know what they don't.
Mm-hmm.
And what this opens the door for as well is other evidence-based practices, like you said, Courtney, to be prescribed as a service for autistic individuals
mm-hmm.
to access.
Mm-hmm.
And for those listening, music therapy is an evidence-based practice for
yes.
autism. I will say, because facts and data, I'll tell the truth, it's only evidence-based for ages 2 to 14 because we just plain don't have enough research for ages 14 and above. So if you're a music therapist who likes doing research, please, please, please do more research with older teens and adults who are autistic.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's the only way we get to be evidence-based, is to have research and scientific evidence backing us up.
Mm-hmm.
I'm talking a lot, so I'm going to let someone else talk.
No, I was just going to throw out there, do you know, did it mention, did it like give a list of like other evidence-based therapies that are recommended as well?
It does.
Okay, that's good.
It does. So not music therapy, but I can tell you what it lists.
Yeah.
It says, whereas current research supports alternatives to ABA, such as DIR floor time, which is developmental individual differences and relationship-based programming, the Play Project, capital PLAY, which I'll be honest, I'm not familiar with.
Yeah.
Individual early social interactions, ESI. Again, I'm not familiar with that one.
Yeah,
and then this one I am, the CERTS program, social communication, emotional regulation, and transactional support. It's another model of social emotional regulation and skill building that I know some SLPs and OTs that I work with are trained in this and have been starting to implement it.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very interesting protocol.
Mm.
So what they do cite, and this is where music therapy continues to be behind the ball, right? And we really need to figure this out as a profession. We don't have a standardized protocol. We don't have standardized assessments. We don't have enough materials that are validated and researched to prove what we're doing. We are an evidence-based practice because we have enough research to show that we make an impact and we've supported and developed skills in certain domain areas, but we don't have a method like CERTS or ESDM or
mm-hmm.
all these different things. Everything's created individually by the therapist, which
mm-hmm.
is beautiful and client-centered, and definitely the push that we're going towards, right, is away from this prescriptive medical model. But to be able to be billable and seen as valued and valid with AMA I think those things also need to happen on our end. So this is a great opportunity for music therapy to say, hey, knock, knock, we're evidence-based, please recommend us. And also, okay, I want a seat at the table. We need this to get there.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's a great point. And I love that you shared the ones that were listed. And I also love that most of us were like, I don't know what those are. And that's good. That's what we want. Like, let's hear about some more, you know, let's shine the spotlight on some more evidence-based practices yes. that we're not so comfortable or not so aware of, because like they could be absolutely fantastic. And guarantee you a lot of other people listening probably have not, you know, heard of those. And that's why, you know, let's take the spotlight off of ABA for the only or the main, you know, provided or recommended therapy for autistic people. This is good. Like, let's open up the door to these other practices for sure.
Yeah. And as I made a post about this on my Instagram, of there's not one way to support any child, autistic, neurotypical, neurodivergent. There are multiple pathways towards success. And I think this statement and this discussion allows us to critically evaluate, get uncomfortable, grow, hopefully within ABA, to really disband and dismantle some of these practices that are so rooted in negativity and truly proven harmful, and move forward. And to also say, period, end, that might not be the protocol that's most effective for someone. And this other protocol could be just as effective.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's why I always encourage parents, like, do your research into every single thing possible. If you dig in and you do your research and you find that ABA is for you, great. I also would encourage you to explore other therapies as well on top of that to collaborate with, you know.
Yeah.
So always look into every single thing, no matter what, before you make a decision.
I think – oh, no, my mic is bonking. I'm getting too heated. I think the problem is always going to be, right, with any major growth point in society, it's money. And we've talked about this with regards to ABA before, that ABA is a really, really profitable style of therapy because it is highly prescribed – for a long duration of time, consistently across days of the week. And because it is assembled, let me find a better word than the word I want to use. Because it is assembled as a structured tier of delivering services where the person who creates the protocols and is trained in the protocols only oversees, who is the BCBA, only oversees the registered behavior technician or behavior interventionist who received a couple dozen hours of training and does not necessarily hold any degree in therapy services. The people who are delivering therapeutic treatment in ABA can make minimum wage, whereas the people who are creating the protocols, plans, and procedures are making a pretty substantial wage. And ABA is still being billed at $110 to $200 an hour, depending on what state and all of those things. So it's a high, high, high revenue maker. And I found the quote that I was looking for in this that is linked in the show notes. Autism treatment represents a fragmented industry that consists of a mixture of for-profit and non-profit organizations, with the top 9 for-profit chains of ABA estimated to have a combined revenue of $547 million and a market value close to $2 billion with future growth expected. I cannot imagine that companies that have a $2 billion network growth estimated within, that means the next fiscal 2 to 3 years, are going to be willing to change. And that's my fear, is that this comes out, Sarah's making a face like, holy cannoli guacamole. I know, Sarah, no, you've been super quiet because Courtney and I are just raging on this topic. But every problem we have right now, I feel like in society, I'm probably overgeneralizing, but it often comes down to money, right? We could be more sustainable as people. It costs money to do so. We could invest in different types of energy. That's a huge expense of investment. I'm not telling the world what to do. I'm not necessarily making judgments on that, but it always comes down to a dollar value. And I don't know how much ABA is willing to change when the profit margins like this, akin to big pharma profit margins? I don't know. That's my fear. Is Courtney, you're an incredible human. You're like one of my absolute best friends. I know your heart is in everything you do. So you're operating through a heart-based practice. But I also know what happens when your money eyes click into place for the people who own these companies. And that's my fear.
Well, I think that fear is validated and justified just by the simple fact that here is this service or treatment plan or whatever, ABA, that has been up until this point touted as like, this is the evidence-based practice. This is the evidence-based practice. You know, that's what is shoved down your throats. And now all of a sudden we're getting all of this not all of a sudden, but according to this, what we're talking about,
sure. Right now, yes.
All of a sudden we're getting all this other information where it's like evidence-based harm. Like that, yeah. there is harm that is, so we've known this, right? And like Courtney said, like nothing is perfect. We don't know everything. Nobody knows everything. We're never going to know all the things. But if we already know that this is something that can and has caused a great deal of harm to a great deal of individuals, and it's still the number one evidence-based practice for this spectrum of disorders, that kind of tells you everything you need to know right there.
Yeah. Yeah. And I also think, and I've said this before, of course it's the most evidence-based because we looked it up, right? How many BCBAs there were? 45,000 or something even more. If someone can look it up and fact check me right now, just to make sure.
Do you want to look up in the US?
Yeah, just in the US. So for music therapists, it's 10,000 and we are a bachelor's level entry field. So we don't require a thesis or research for someone to get their degree. I would guess probably less than 4,000 of us hold an advanced degree. And then even only some of us do research. So in totality right now, there's a lot. How many?
So it just, from the BACB, it says as of June 30th, 2023, the numbers of individuals holding BACB certification with your board certified behavior analyst, whatever role.
Sure.
62,856.
Right. And to get that degree, you had to have a master's degree. So 62,000 people currently got a master's degree, and all of you had to do research and applied project to graduate, right?
Correct.
So you have 62,000 people currently having data and evidence. And ABA in itself is a data-driven practice, right?
Yep.
You're constantly collecting and evaluating data.
Yeah.
So the research is feeding itself. Right.
Yep.
So of course you're evidence-based because, and the reason they are and other people are not, for people listening, like, why doesn't everybody do that? Because they have the time to take the data that they need. As a music therapist, I am taking data in every session, but I only see a client one time per week.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the goals I have to write to be realistic for me to measure while I'm being the clinical implementer, right? And I don't have time to watch videos and review it. Whereas a BCBA may be watching the session while someone else is implementing and tracking the data for them. So you're always having the most accurate, most consistent data, which is fantastic, but it's because you have multiple clinicians present to do so, and we don't. But it's one hand is feeding the other. Yeah, it's the most evidence-based because you're constantly taking evidence and you're seeing that client so much. If we put it in perspective, sort of like they do for like income per capita, if we did like data per session capita, I wonder, and that's why I think that article is saying it's not as evidence-based as we think it is, because when you average it out like with everybody else, it's very similar. It's akin to.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Did I say too many big words? I'm sorry.
No. No.
We have intelligent listeners. Y'all are great.
It makes me think of how every paradigm, every social construct, right, which I would consider ABA to have been born out of a social construct, right? Lovass, was that his name, Lovass? He created this manual, this process, this protocol from having a specific orientation. Let's think about other large documents or philosophies that have come from a paradigm or social orientation. The Constitution.
Yeah.
what other kinds of examples would we have here that probably no one's ever heard of?
like religion, a lot of biblical, like Bibles, the Quran, right? Like whatever, all of these.
We're just making everybody mad on this episode. Well done.
All of these documents, protocols, these constructs, we have been talking about as a contemporary society, prior to being a contemporary society, how these originated in a time and in a reality in which that information was correct, it was relevant, it was deemed appropriate by the majority. So I think this particular situation with AMA and ABA is a natural progression in social order. It's just something that was due and is just part as we continue to evolve as humans and continue to question why we do what we do as humans. We're now having this conversation. Mm-hmm. I think that the conversation surrounding the Constitution, surrounding biblical texts, we see that, look at how the Constitution is structured. Look at how some biblical texts, I will say, are interpreted. There is harm. There is harm to small numbers of people, large numbers of people. We can still have these conversations, but unfortunately, the reality doesn't change very much, right? Racism, exclusion across the board in religions, within their own religions, within other religions exist. I am hopeful and optimistic that this conversation surrounding ABA, surrounding evidence-based practice, surrounding the American Medical Association stance will bring about some positive change. But I am also a skeptic because, again, I see how long these conversations about religion and constitutional rights here in the United States have been going on. And there hasn't been much momentum. And when we do have periods of momentum, we then see different forces or people or groups come in and sort of erase that movement forward and that progress. So it sort of, I'm grateful that we are here. I'm grateful that we're having this conversation. I'm glad that other evidence-based therapies are now maybe not being considered, but are being discussed so that we can get to a point of consideration. But I don't have a sense where this is going to go. I think it could just be this boom that we're experiencing right now, which is reactions, reactions, reactions. I don't know what, how that movement or how that's going to propel movement going forward.
And as we said at the beginning, they updated the language in this resolution. They didn't explicitly withdraw support for ABA, right? They say they withdraw support is the clickbait title, but they didn't. They removed language that is outrightly saying ABA, but they didn't say, and not ABA, and we're no longer letting ABA be billable. And my other concern that'll happen too, and I guess this is a call to action for BCBAs, because Courtney, I know you're a good one. I know you're friends with good ones. I know we've had good ones on the podcast, is to not let ABA as a whole, or the BACB, so many acronyms, to not let them swing the pendulum further away from being uncomfortable and addressing the issue and making change. Because I think what you said, Noah, is something that really happens, right? And we see it with our political climate here in the US, of we swung one way and then we swung so far the other way. And now we're working just to swing back a little bit. And this could be a catalyst for ABA to swing even harder into, no, we're this, and this is how we've done it, and this is the way, versus getting curious and creative and problem solving and sitting here and listening to these things that are now fact, being uncomfortable and moving forward.
Yeah, I think, I feel like, Noah, you said something like this. I was just enamored with your response, so I was just so sucked in. But, like, this is, a hot topic of discussion. ABA in general has been a hot topic of discussion for quite some time now. And I think, I mean, everybody, especially BCBAs and people in the field, like, we need to not just take this as a hot topic and, you know, spew our two cents, but we need to actually dive deep into ourselves and how we're providing services and figure out how we can make small changes, no matter what that looks like. Because my company likes to say, one of our mantras is to get 1% better every day, right? And in the big scheme of things, looking at a year, that's 365% better. And so if we're just taking it's a great one, right? I love it. Mm-hmm. I live by that in my own personal life now too. It's so good. But if we're really focusing on, you know, diving into ourselves, and, you know, as I was reflecting on this, and I was thinking about, you know, my master's program and my schooling, and I loved it, and I graduated in 2017, so it wasn't even that long ago, but I was still learning some of these topics that are very controversial in the field. And so I've had to already dig deep in my learning to figure out what are some other types of, you know, interventions that I could be using to replace some of these ones that we have now learned that are not so great. And so please, like, just take this moment, you know, this hot topic of discussion, and use it to push yourselves forward and just do better in general too. Because again, it's not just a hot topic, but this is a moment for everybody to figure out, you know, what our next steps can and really should be for everybody involved in the therapeutic process. You know, every single one of them.
I think if BCBA or ABA companies are smart, which Courtney, you know better than I do if they're smart, and they want to think as business professionals and entrepreneurs while also thinking ethically as therapists, they will find that balance between creating or updating their policies to empower their supervisors to cultivate that type of conversation.
Yeah.
Because Courtney, I would love to live in a world in which people are intrinsically motivated or independently inspired to question their orientations and their work. But, like, let's be honest, if you're in it for the money, which a lot of people are, and that's fine. You deserve to make a great living. Mm-hmm. I am not judging that. But if you're like, yeah, it's just a job for me, they're going to go in, they're going to do their work, and then they're going to go home and leave their work at work, which, good for you, that sounds amazing. But my point being, they're not going to add in that time for introspective reflection. Mm-hmm. So I think that great ABA point. can keep making money, but unless the supervisors, the people guiding the people on the ground doing the work, feel supported by their employers to be able to say, guys, we need to question why we're doing this. We need to question our thoughts and our orientations. There's not going to be change. A supervisor doesn't want to jeopardize their own position. They should be told directly by their employers and empowered to have that change happen, right? And we know in terms of how business structures work when they work well, it's the top down, meaning that it's coming from the policymakers, the decision makers, the CFOs, right? The people who are ultimately keeping the business going.
Yeah.
For that, I think for there to really be any hope. And I don't think that's a big ask. I don't think that's a big ask.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, but I think what's a big ask is I think the supervisors can do that. I think the big deconstruction in ABA is from the supervisor to the RBTs, because those people are not making a great wage. They're making minimum wage most often, maybe a little above, and they don't have the motivation or care, and it is just a job. Most people who take an RBT job either are working to become a BCBA, so they do really care, and it's a career, not a job. But I'd say more often than not, it's just somebody who's looking for a job that has decent hours, benefits, and solid pay, where, you know, above minimum wage, somewhere between 15 to 20 bucks an hour, probably most likely as you move up in the years as an RBT. But that's there's going to be a breakdown there, that I think the companies can cultivate it, and there can be great supervisors, and you're still just going to have plenty of RBTs who it's a job.
Yeah. And but if
that's the mentality, though, if the RBTs are like, this is just a job, I would probably argue then that they are not only going to duck out of the profession themselves because the pay is so low, but also they're probably replaceable. So if a supervisor is saying, like, no, you need to follow my direction as your mentor, and they're not following it, like, peace out, right? I'm not saying it's a perfect system. I think it's quite flawed, but I think that that is a good place to start is is with the practitioners.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, because like you were saying, I mean, starting at the top tier with so much money on the line, you know, some of these businesses, ABA companies who, you know, are in it for the money, and we all know that that's a thing. Most, you know, that's a thing. Like they don't want to, like one of you guys said, they might not want to change because that could be a huge loss for themselves. And so that's where it gets really scary, really sticky, really unnerving. And I think, I mean,
oh, you're muted, Courtney. I think I muted you. I'm so sorry. It was me. Sorry, y'all.
Can you hear me? Oh, that's
yeah, good. You're good now.
Okay. I was saying that I don't have a lot of like super strong opinions in general, but I think the people who want to change are probably not the people who are in those like very higher up positions in the company where they can impact the change. And that's another big scary thing. Yeah. So.
And we do know that ABA companies across the country are closing because the interest in ABA has shifted.
I think
if your revenue is $547 million, you need to make the change to see that.
Yeah.
The Center for Autism and Related Disorders, which has facilities across 24 states across the U.S. Sorry, my dog is having a moment. Had centers across 24 states in the U.S., now only has 14. They closed in 10 states across the U.S.
Yeah.
Which is huge.
Huge.
And more companies are shifting. And I do see more and more ABA companies being an integrative practice where they're working with SLPs and OTs and developmental therapists and mental health clinicians in-house in one area. But I do think voting with our dollar in all instances is what's going to matter the most, and pushing back on companies having that confidence as a BCBA to say, no, I'm not implementing that protocol. It's harmful. And here's the data that shows you why. And the people that we're supporting and serving are harmed by what we're doing, and we can't keep doing it.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, great talk.
I am feeling very hopeful, and I am not one who's known for my optimism.
She's a black hat thinker.
I am
a skeptic by nature. That's the New York in me. I'm a realist. But when I didn't have my phone last night when the chat was going off, and so I woke up this morning to like 45 messages in the chat, and it was like the first thing I saw was the clickbait headline, like, AMA pulls support for AB. And I was like, oh my gosh. And all I could think of was, although just like anything, we know that there are problematic ABA services. We know that exists. We also know that there are a great number of people who this has been a godsend for. It's been something that has been so important and all I could think of was the parents who would be reading those headlines and thinking, oh my God, how am I going to continue to support my child? Mm-hmm. And then when I further read and like I woke up a bit and the panic dissipated a little bit.
Yeah.
And I realized that what this was doing was opening the door for there to be other kinds of services provided for these individuals. And really, we also know that one size does not fit all, right? There is not one solution or one treatment method or one, even in, you know, this is not my world, but even in the therapy world, right? There's a different modality and different kind of therapy for every single person. We all have our individual unique needs. So knowing how expensive these services are for a lot of people and how inaccessible that makes so many of these services for so many people. Now having this opportunity to hopefully the momentum keeps moving forward and these other practices, these other modalities, these other therapies are now included in billable treatments or billable services for individuals with autism. It just opens up the door, I think, for so many more people to be helped. And I love that for us. Now, again, I'm not known for my optimism. So there is a voice in the back of my mind that's like, I mean, kind of like what Noah was saying, right? Like, we've been fighting a lot of these good fights for a very long time. But this is at least a conversation in the right direction. It's at least taking it into consideration. It's at least bringing this up into conversation. I'm glad people are heated about it. I'm glad the clickbait is there. I'm glad people are reading it.
Yeah.
It needs to happen. And I'm hopeful for all those families who may now potentially gain access to services that they did not have access to before.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And with how much it's been going viral, I think it gives access to knowledge for parents, providers, and prescribers to see other options and have a name for them. I think a lot of times parents know what they're told, and they're told, okay, you got to go find an ABA therapist, and you have to find social groups for your kid, or you have to find OT and feeding, right? It depends on what the provider has prescribed for you. And I think seeing these things where they're seeing the harm, and it's from facts and data, not just in a Facebook group where it's a lot of people yelling opinions at each other, which can or cannot be helpful, maybe more of the latter. I think it gives words and knowledge and power to the parent to say, oh, I want to try this model that I didn't even know was a thing. So I'm also going to say it's a call to action for the American Music Therapy Association to throw their hat in the ring as an evidence-based practice, to be in front of prescribers saying, hey, we do this, because it's important that we are part of the conversation. This is an opportunity to move the needle forward for us as well. So I am cautiously optimistic, like everybody else. I think a lot of the reality is this may be another thing that drops in the echo chamber and doesn't go anywhere, but I think it also,
hopefully not.
Yes. Hope opens up a lot of great dialogue across both sides of the table, like this wonderful podcast, to move all of our industries forward.
So. Well, and I think that's what we have to leave with is that optimism that Sarah like introduced and is trying to instill in all of us, which is, If we set ourselves up to expect these massive changes and massive changes really quickly, we're not setting anyone up for a realistic expectation or outcome. So if we can be appreciative of these micro efforts to have these conversations, I think that is a perfectly fine place to start. And we have to start somewhere, right? I think this whole conversation just leads us to remember that we have to start somewhere, and it's not a how big or how small. It's let's start here, and we'll quantify and expand as we grow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yes. Just take that one step, just one foot in front of the other.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And from now on, you guys can refer to me as Little Miss Sunshine, because I'm obviously so hopeful.
Yeah. We'll get really a cute little t-shirt
with my personality, you can wear, especially with as I sit here in the darkness, dark like my soul.
Yes, if you could see, Sarah's just sitting in complete darkness, no lights on, in a room that has apparently no air conditioning. So she is just drenched in sweat, but she was devoted to this conversation. It does, it's just really loud,
and I don't have my headphones, so I can't hear anything. So,
but you know what?
We're
at that time anyway where we've got to wrap. Sarah's got to go cool down. We've all got to go do our thing. But thank you, Courtney, for pulling this conversation into the chat, and then Alyssa for chiming in, and then Sarah and I were able to catch up and read through everything. And it's such a necessary conversation, and I'm really happy with where our conversation went tonight. And
I agree.
I'm like Sarah, feeling some degree of optimism paired with my characteristic skepticism. So,
You're welcome, guys. You're welcome. You can always count on me to add that little cheeriness at the end.
I think it's that time.
Yeah.
Where we say, gotta go. Bye.
Bye. Bye.
Thanks for listening to Coffee and Therapy. Keep the conversation flowing and follow us over on Instagram at Coffee and Therapy. Questions, thoughts, ideas? Email us coffeeandtherapy@gmail.com. We can't wait for you to listen in again soon.